So the whole Bible is about the Lord. Are you aware of that? The whole Bible is about the Lord. When Jesus, after he was crucified and rose again, walked on the road to Emmaus with two of his disciples, and they didn't at first recognize him, he said to them, "O foolish ones, and slow of heart to believe in all that the prophets have spoken. Ought not Christ to have suffered these things and entered into his glory? And then, beginning at Moses and all of the prophets, he expounded to them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself." And, you know, without the Lord's help, you and I could read the Bible all the way through the Old Testament and only see maybe little spots here and there, like that one we did for our recitation, or rather in the talk for the children, "Unto us a child is born." Only little spots where it's talking about the Lord. But here Jesus was telling his disciples that in all of the scriptures, it's talking about himself. So since the word is all about the Lord, his coming into the world, his death and crucifixion, and the work that he accomplished thereby, it seemed appropriate to me to start off our preparation for Christmas by looking at the story of God telling Moses who he is early on in the story of the Exodus. Because this story is really about the Lord and his coming into the world. The Exodus story is about the Lord and his coming into the world to save us on a deeper level. If you look at that story, back 400 years before Joseph was sold into slavery and he went down into Egypt and brought his family down, and they were all saved from starvation. But gradually, as the people grew, they were seen as a threat by the king of Egypt, and he enslaved them and practiced various forms of genocide to keep them from being a threat to him. And the Lord came to Moses to promise to deliver them from slavery. And you could see this as one of many stories in the Bible that are actually talking about how the Lord came into the world to deliver us from spiritual death and slavery. So I wanted to read this. This isn't in your pew card, but this is the story from Exodus chapter 3, verses 1 through 12. Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the back of the desert and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire from the midst of a bush. So he looked, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, but the bush was not consumed. Then Moses said, "Now I will turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush does not burn." So when the Lord saw that he turned aside to look, God called to him out of the midst of the bush and said, "Moses, Moses." And he said, "Here I am." And he said, that is, God said, "Do not draw near this place. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place where you stand is holy ground." Moreover, he said, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Jacob," or Isaac, "and the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. And the Lord said, "I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt, and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. So I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them from that land to a good and large land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites and the Hittites, the Amorites and the Perizzites, the Hivites and the Jebusites. Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel has come to me, and I have seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppress them. Come now, therefore, I will send you to Pharaoh, that he may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. And I think that it's fundamental for us to see all of these different stories of the Lord's delivering his people as stories of the Lord delivering the world by his coming in the flesh, but also his delivering us from our own particular demons and struggles and bringing us to a happy and blessed and useful state. You might say it's the fundamental purpose of Revelation, and it's a fundamental teaching of the new church. The true Christian religion in number two tells us the faith of the new heaven and the new church in its universal form is this: the Lord from eternity, who is Jehovah, came into the world to gain control over the hells and to glorify his own human. If he had not done this, no one mortal could have been saved. Those who believe in him are saved. So we can look at some of the details of this story. First of all, the Lord, or the angel of Jehovah, appeared to Moses in a bramble. And a bramble has a meaning, and it means truths on the lowest level. You know, things that we might learn as little children, or when we read the Bible and we don't very much understand it, we'll say, that's like a bramble. You know, it has potential to flower, possibly even grow rose hips or something, but it's a bramble. And so the Lord appears to Moses in a bramble, but the bramble is burning. There's a fire in it, and the fire cannot be consumed. And the Secrets of Heaven, number 68:26 says, the angel appeared to him means the Lord's divine human. In a flame of fire from the middle of a bramble bush means God's love present in true factual knowledge. And he saw, and behold, the bramble bush was burning with fire means a recognition that true factual knowledge was full of the good of God's love. And the bramble bush was not consumed means divine truth united to divine good in the natural. And the bramble bush not consumed is a symbol of the Lord resurrected. Think about that. We see that here, even in this story. So one way we look at this story is to say, this is about Jesus Christ in the world, teaching the things that he taught us in such a way that we could begin to see the quality of God's love. And on a personal level, we come in states of struggle, like the children of Israel in slavery. We come in states of despair and hopelessness, feeling powerlessness to become a better person, or to be a good husband or wife, or to be a good worker. We have all these struggles going on in ourselves. We see ourselves almost like slaves, and we cannot save ourselves. And then God appears to us in the few things that we believe, the fire burning in the bramble. So let's read, and this is in your pew card, Exodus 3, 13 through 16. Then Moses said to God, indeed, when I come to the children of Israel and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they say to me, what is his name? What shall I say to them? And God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, thus you shall say to the children of Israel, I am has sent you. Moreover, God said to Moses, thus you shall say to the children of Israel, the Lord God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and this is my memorial to all generations. I am that I am. My Hebrew professor, Reverend Bruce Rogers, back in theological school some 45 years ago, said that if he were translating that, he would have translated, I am I who am. In other words, I am the one who is. It's sometimes translated, I am that I am. But I think any one of those things carries this idea of essential being. Everything in creation comes forth from the love of God. And if we're looking to find God's love, we can see it in all of creation, just like we can see it in the bramble bush. Especially, we can see it in higher forms of life. We can see the beauty of God's love in the way creatures care for their little babies, in the way human beings learn to love and serve one another. So again, let's read Secrets of Heaven 68:80, talking about God who is the I Am. I am who I am symbolizes the essential reality and the emerging presence of everything in the universe. This can be seen from the fact that I am means essential reality. And since he alone is the essential reality, the phrase is used as a name. I am comes up twice in I am who I am, because one instance symbolizes essential reality and the other emerging presence. So one symbolizes divinity itself, which is called the Father, and the other symbolizes divine humanity, which is called the Son. Because divine humanity emerges from divine reality, or Jehovah. Even in regard to his human side, the divine presence that emerges from divine reality is the divine truth that radiates from his divine humanity. And you might say the word is the Lord, and when God is telling Moses to go to the people and say, I am has sent me to you, it's really telling us that the Lord in his revealed human form sends us the word, and the word leads us out of slavery. And that's the story. The Lord names himself the I Am because we need to think of God as being, as creator, as love, as all wisdom, as being all powerful. That's where our thoughts need to go to first. So we're told that we should think of God from his essence to his person, because the person, or all of the external manifestations of God, if we look at them in little pieces, might not convey the real picture. But when we start from love, when we start from Creator God, and then we think about his presence in the world as a little baby with toenails and all those other things that little babies have, then we don't lose the picture of who God really is and who this baby really is. So it's useful to think of the whole story of the Lord's life in these terms, because the love of God is the underlying principle that is appearing to us that wants to save us. So the task card, which is on the back page of the pew card, I'm going to start with the reflection The task card really is about something you can do to start preparing yourself for Christmas. In the reflection, it says, God spoke to Moses out of a bush that burned but was not consumed. And the teachings of the new church tell us to think of God from his very essence. And that's what he presented the name I Am to Moses for, so that the people would think of God from his very essence. Everyone who thinks about God from the point of view of his essence has the idea of one God. For he declares that God created us. The same God redeems us and saves us and enlightens and instructs us. And that's from True Christianity 6:32. So when you're reading the Gospels, you might get the idea that Jesus is a man, or you might get the idea that Jesus only came as the lamb that would be slain, and that he would somehow buy our salvation in that way. But if we start with the idea that the love that is the creative force of the universe came into the world, then it straightens all of our thinking out, and we see one God. So the task, I invite you sometime this week to think about how you visualize God, or how you think about the Lord. And this is a very personal thing. There's not a right way. And in fact, you might say there's an infinitely different number of ways that we can think about the Lord. So spend some time thinking about how you visualize the Lord. Sometimes I think about the Lord as the sun, and infinite rays of light are shining out from the sun in all directions, and at the end of each one of those rays is a created human being. And each one of those created human beings, looking back to the sun or to God, sees God from a slightly different perspective. But I invite you to think about how you see God. When you pray, do you have a certain image or picture that you see? Do you think of God's love, mercy, or power as something that can help you? How do you imagine that God is thinking about you? How do you imagine that God is thinking about you? So in the coming weeks, we'll be looking at some of these ways that Jesus takes the name I Am onto himself. And the most striking one is when he was in the temple and the Jews ask him, just who do you think you are? Are you greater than our fathers, greater than Abraham? And Jesus said, before Abraham was, I am. So that's not the only place. The book of John has seven places where Jesus says, I am. And we'll be talking about some of those in the coming weeks. I am the light of the world. I am the bread of life. Things like that. Amen.